at your service. It's the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts. To ask a question, call 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Now the host of the show, Rich Orris.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Hour two. Welcome in, 97.1 FM listeners. We've got plenty of time. We've got plenty going on. We've had a lot of great conversations, great questions in the past hour. Great response. People calling in and helping out with their answers, remedies of what they've seen and what they've worked through with some of the questions. So always appreciate that as well. You can find me right here. We've got a whole nother hour for you. Feel free to call or text in 314-436-7900, and we'll get you on and see how we can help you out. And speaking of that, we've got Kevin on the line, has a question for us. So, Kevin, are you there?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. Very good. Good afternoon. Thanks for calling.
Yes. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. How can we help you?
All right, I have a footing. My front porch is on a footing, and when they finish the concrete, I'm going to say that it is sloping towards the house, maybe a 16th of an inch towards the house where it should have been away from the house. So I have water settling in between my porch and my house, and it's getting down in between the walls going and down into my basement. It can't be jacked up because it's on a footing. So can the concrete maybe be shaved off on the higher part, and then I could put like an epoxy going across? What's your thought on this?
Yeah, that's a really good question because I feel like one, it might be able to be poly jacked up. Is the siding right down against the concrete of the front porch? Is there like vinyl siding or what?
Vinyl siding.
So if you, even if they thought they could successfully do that, because basically you have a footing with foundation walls and then they fill it with rock and then they pour the concrete patio on top of that. So I feel like you could do like a poly jacking and see if they can raise that up. And basically what it would do is it might, off the foundation that returns towards the house, it just might lift it off of that a little bit on that backside. You're coming down the side of it, and that might be okay, but you'd have to take siding off and redo all that to, because if it came up a quarter, 3/8 of an inch to get water going the correct way, that could work, and you just got to kind of redo your siding to meet the new height. As grinding it down, I mean, you can, but that would be extensive. That would be pretty extensive. Do you have a rail on the porch?
Yes, yeah, all that could be
rail,
removed.
Rail, porch post, yeah. All that. Because, yeah. I mean, in looking at doing something like grinding it down to get an angle and putting something over it to make it look good again, because if you do grind it down like that, if you've ever seen a sidewalk where they do that drastically, that's what it's going to look like. It's just going to... It would be rough, and you'd need a new coating. And I would say that might not be, I would compare something like that against new concrete.
Okay.
Because the cost may be just the same. Because in order to really do that well and make it right, you'd have to support the roof, take the post and the rails out.
Yep.
Get that work done, and then get the coating done, and then get everything put back together. And I feel like that just new concrete might be about that same cost.
All right.
And you basically just rip it out and pour new concrete and get the thing sloping. They just don't make it as thick on the outside. edge and get it to slope the right way. So I think that's kind of, you kind of have three ways that would be possible. Your idea of like angle it down and put some kind of coating, replace it, get it to slope the right direction. Or I think you could consider the poly jacking, and it kind of lifts off the foundation, and you basically just kind of caulk that foundation between like the underside of where that porch overhangs and that foundation to just keep water, stuff like that out, bugs out, whatever, just from that outside edge, not on the front, but on that side where it lifts up, and you'd have a little siding repair. That would be, if they could successfully do that and get that lifted up, that would be the least expensive version.
All right. Yeah, I'll call at Stratiform and see if they can do that. I'll have them do an evaluation then. And I just wanted to get your opinion because all your thoughts and your opinions are excellent. So
appreciate that. I do my best. I am human. We do what we can.
Yes.
But definitely appreciate it. And a lot of it is just kind of real world, tried this in the past and, you know, find the best way. And that's why the listeners are so good sometimes too, because that you can look up all sorts of remedies, but who's had success with them is the big question. So, yep.
Yeah, like you said, maybe tearing it out might be the best bet, but I'll talk to Stratiform and I'll do, you know, all I need to do is just do a couple quotes and see what it's going to cost and go with the best plan. But
yep.
Hey, I want to thank you again. I want to wish you a prosperous and happy new year. And thanks again for everything. I'm looking forward to listening to you all year.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. Thanks, Kevin. And I would say, too, if you do start getting into the full concrete replacement, Mosby Building Arts can be the company that like takes out the post and supports the roof, and we can perform an entire project like that for you if you get into that entire concrete replacement. So kind of could give you same thing, just see what you think, get some different quotes from different versions. Definitely talk to people about, you know, what do you think the likelihood polyjacking does raise it? How long do you think that would last? I would think under a porch like that with a foundation, that should last a really long time. It's your best bet because your water's going to be running off and all of that. But, you know, feel people out and then get different scenarios, and then you can make a good educated decision, figure out the best one for yourself.
Do that, and I'll also let you know what I end up doing 3 months from now or whenever. I have it done, I'll reach back out on Saturday and let you know.
Yeah, that would be perfect. Yeah, let me know how it turns out, all of that. That'd be great. All right, Kevin. Appreciate it. We're going to jump towards a break here, but we've got plenty of time for everyone, whatever your need is. 314-436-7900. Got a couple texts we'll try and squeeze in here. And any other questions, comments, concerns, any new remedies, any more remedies for what we've talked about, something you've seen work really well, let us know about it. We love the conversation. We'll jump into our break, and we'll have more for you after that.
It's the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts. Once again, Rich Orris.
Improvement Show. Rich Orris here for you today, helping out, doing the best I can. Scott's honor, I will do anything I can, the best I can, to the best of my ability, to see if we can help you with solutions. Anything going on around your house, what's happening from the roof to the basement, foundation on up, we can handle it for you today. 314-436-7900. We got Ruth on the line. Let's jump straight to Ruth and see how we can help. Hi, Ruth.
Well, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling because I have a friend who recently moved into an apartment in my building, and the building's about 9 years old. She has a thing, she has white dust And I don't know if you or any of your listeners have ever had anything to do with white dust, but it even is in her closed kitchen cabinets. So if it's coming through the vents, how does it get into the cabinets? And have you ever had any dealings with this?
I mean, white dust can be several things. In a building that is 9 years old, there is a possibility maybe that it is drywall dust. So the drywall that we build the walls with and tape and mud and drywall and everything inside, that dust is white and it's light and can float if it gets, when you cut it, when you do anything with it. So the first thing I would probably advise looking at is the ductwork, like a ductwork cleaning company, or looking inside the ductwork if you can remove a floor register from some of the ductwork in the rooms, and they even make cameras that hook to your phone that are like a camera snake that can go 4, 5, 6 feet.
I think all the registers are high up.
They're all high up, yeah.
How would it get in the kitchen cabinets when they're closed?
Well, because the kitchen cabinets, when they're closed, they actually don't seal tight. And if it's getting in the kitchen cabinets, then there's a lot of it, or there's a lot of air movement in the kitchen cabinets, because the doors and the drawers will have little rubber bumpers, and so the door doesn't actually seal airtight like your front door. It shuts, but there's a space. There's an eighth inch or so, 3/16 of an inch space where the door isn't actually hitting the cabinet. And even if the rubber bumper's gone and say the door hits the cabinet on the handle side and it actually touches it, it may not be touching it on the hinge side because it could be just a little bit away from that. So there's a space around the doors and drawers with these rubber bumpers where air does get in there and dust travels with air. So that could be, that's definitely how it's getting in there. Unless there's the other thing I would look at, especially in the kitchen cabinets, is there's a lot of circumstances with this as far as if the cabinets are, if they go up to the ceiling and they're pulling away, or
no, they don't go to the ceiling.
They don't go to the ceiling. Yeah. So the other thing you can look for is when you open the cabinets, if you look at the top of the cabinets, see if you see any space between the back of the cabinet at the very top, like the backing and the top of the cabinet. Because okay, if they screw them to the wall and they're cheap cabinets and the cabinets start to pull away, she could have dust actually coming down into the cabinet from the top where it's separating. The back of the cabinet is separating from the top of the cabinet. Shine a flashlight and see if you see it shining up through the cabinet from inside, you know, on the ceiling or the wall above the cabinet.
I'll look with her.
Yeah, so that's could
building,
be.
I don't have that problem.
Yeah, and it could be that where she is, when they built it, they could have got a lot of drywall dust or drywall chunks in newer homes, in homes that are 5, 10 years old or so, or any new built home that was made with drywall that has never had the ductwork clean. I've found pieces of drywall in the ductwork, in the trunk line. Like it fell in from the wall when they cut it, and there's just a chunk of drywall that was cut out with rough edges that's laying in the bottom of the ductwork, and every time that air is flowing, it's pulling some of the dust off the edges of that drywall. So it could be that. And then the other stuff is in a newer home like that, you're not going to have plaster. I wouldn't think like, because white is also like calcium lime. It's efflorescence on brick coming out of brick or coming out of plaster. That's all white, but really I wouldn't guess it's any of that. A lot of the insulation they blow in the attic, is she on a middle floor or is there an attic above her?
No, she's on the third floor.
She's on the third floor, so definitely look around the whole apartment for any cracks or gaps in the ceiling itself, because a lot of the newer homes, the insulation they blow in is white. And if there's a crack across the ceiling or a space around a light fixture and air is passing through there, it could be pulling some fibers from the insulation. I'm kind of doubtful on that if you're getting a lot of it.
My guess is, my question, when you mentioned vacuuming the registers, how often would you have to do that?
Well, there's companies that can come out and clean out the registers. They run lines in and they spray and clean. If you have something like that done to it, then, I mean, you maybe do that like every 5 years or so, 5 to 10-ish. It really depends on the house, how many people live in it, how much you come and go, how much dust is produced. And so looking and checking is really the best way to do it. If you're,
we would have to go through the management.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much they're willing to do.
They're probably not willing to do a whole heck of a lot.
Once had a cleaner come out to when I had a house in St. Charles to come out and clean my ducts, and their equipment didn't fit my ducts, so I couldn't get them cleaned. But I should have gone maybe with a different company. Anyway, I won't take up any more of your time. I appreciate your thoughts on this situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll actually, when we get this solved, I'll call you back and let you know what happened.
All right, perfect. Appreciate that for sure. Yeah, I'd love to hear what it is. Let's jump over to Chris and see what's happening with Chris. Hey, how you doing, Chris?
Hey, Rich. Continuing on sealing ductworks, what is your opinion on sealing the ductworks in a house?
Oh, as far as like sealing them so they do not leak?
Correct.
My opinion is, boy, I wish we did it every single time. It definitely makes for a better system. What we were just talking about with the white dust, the cold air returns in a new constructed house. They run right through a wall, the back of the drywall, the 2x4s. Sometimes a wire will cross through there, and that wire can catch dust or debris or whatever, that wire creates holes at each end where the subfloor kind of meets the wall. A lot of times you can see like dirt. I was talking about insulation turning black in a basement on the BAM board. Well, sometimes your carpet does that at the bottom of a cold air return, because there's space between the drywall, the subfloor, the hole cut in the wall. So air can suck down in there, and it's pulling air in. So it pulls the dirt and the dust with it, and you get these black marks on the carpet right where your cold air return is in the wall. So having all that sealed is awesome. If that was a sealed ductwork system, none of that would happen. It would just suck air in. 100% of that would go down to the actual unit itself. And that's just the return side. Now on the positive side, when you force the air through it, 20 to 30% of the air that blows through ductwork leaks out of it.
Oh,
so yeah, exactly. So if you have ductwork in your attic, and then all the vents face down, I would always recommend sealing that, because if it's in your basement and you lose 20 to 30% of the air, it's going to migrate to the first floor. If it's in your attic, it's going to migrate. Sometimes you can even tell the houses that have that when it snows, because they'll be the first house to not have snow on their roof. It will melt away because they're running all this hot air. It's leaking out, and it's literally melting the snow on the roof. So, yeah, sealing all that really, and it makes the whole HVAC system just function better, because 100% of the air is going where it should. And then when the return air pulls it in, 100% of that air goes where it should. And the biggest imbalance in how HVAC systems work is the cold air returns are sucking air in. So whether it comes from the grate that they put on the wall, or it siphons through your carpet and creates dirt marks, or if it comes around the edges of your floor joists where the metal maybe is not real tight to the bottom of a floor joist in the basement, the issue is it gets 100% of the return air, but as the rooms don't always get 100% of the supply air because they leak in the basement before it gets to the room. So
one top question.
Yeah, it's a great thing to do. Great question. I appreciate that, Chris.
Can I ask a follow-up real quick?
Sure.
If part of your house has a finished basement and you can't get to the ductworks, anything that you can seal up is an improvement, correct?
Yes. Yep. Because it'll still leak 10, 20, 30% in certain places you couldn't get to, but it won't in other places. So, yep, it's fine to do. It's definitely worth doing.
That's what I needed to know. Thank you, sir.
Hey, you are very welcome. Great question. Haven't heard that one in quite a while. I got a little excited there. I went a little long with it. I apologize. But, Mark, if you can hang on line for a couple minutes, and everybody else, 314-436-7900. Love to hear from you. We got plenty more to come right after these messages. Welcome back. Welcome back. Here we are. Plenty of time for everybody. Great conversations going on. A lot of involvement from the listeners with their thoughts, their ideas. As we go through all this, it is definitely difficult to think of absolutely everything that might be a part of every thought, every project, every figuring. It's kind of like why at Mosby Building Arts, how we have this design build process to figure out one person trying to figure out absolutely everything. Two heads are absolutely always better than one, and the more the merrier. If you have anything for us, feel free to call in. You got any questions? You got something going on? We've got plenty of time for you. 314-436-7900. And we got Mark on the line here. I think he has some advice for us to add to the toilet cleaning thing. Hey, Mark, are you there?
Yes, I am. That gentleman, I believe, said he bought like a gallon of muriatic acid.
Yeah.
I'm not a chemist, but I believe that's a poisonous gas. A friend of mine was swimming decades ago at an indoor pool, and the workers were scrubbing the deck with like Ajax, and then it got mixed in with some of the chlorine that they use in the pool, and it created a poisonous gas. I believe it was called muriatic acid, and she had to go to the hospital for several days. So, like I said, I'm not a chemist, but I would be extremely careful with anything that, you know, said muriatic acid on it, and it wasn't well ventilated.
Yes, definitely, so. And I appreciate you so much bringing up this point, because the PPE protective stuff. Goggles and respirator and gloves, and then being well ventilated. And what I try and advise quite often is read the instructions, read what they suggest, because most of all these products will tell you don't mix this with other chemicals, or because you mix muriatic acid with bleach or other things, like, you don't want to mix that with nothing but water. There is a large safety concern if you are going to do that in a toilet. Yeah, like you said, open windows, close the door, keep it separate, have the bath fan running that's sucking air outside. and it's stripping chemicals in a basement with in the winter with a furnace. I mean, there's I urge everybody to think about all of these things that you do and always read the safety and the precautions and the recommendations of all these products and take them very, very seriously. So, yeah, you bring up a really great point with that.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, no, you're very welcome. Thank you for the thought and the call because, it is very important. And I've talked even not just the health and the all that with reading up on these, but even reading up on how to use products, safety, health, ventilation, all that stuff is obviously the most important thing. But so many people just use cleaning products wrong or incorrectly. You see a spray bottle and it says, oh, it removes 99.9% of bacteria or this or that. And then if you actually read the instructions on how to use that cleaner, it most of those will tell you to leave that cleaner on the surface for a certain amount of time, 10, 15 minutes sometimes. So if you spray this on and you immediately wipe it off and you walk away believing you killed 99% of any type of flu or bacteria or any of that, that may not be the case. So if read up on that, you will be surprised. I did a thing a few years back on a bunch of cleaners and I read a bunch of them on the air and it was surprising how many said, let it sit on the surface for 10, 15, 20 minutes sometimes on these products. And it's like, wow, I didn't know that until I read this. I would take a cleaner and spray it on and wipe this off. And we started learning more about this truly with COVID was mainly what happened is when people really started like, well, what kills the best? What works the best? And then all of a sudden we went, well, how do we really use it to make sure it works like that? And then you read it and go, oh, man, I've been using a product like this for 25 years and never one time did I leave it on the counter for 20 minutes. Yeah, it's definitely worth looking at. And I've talked about it a lot in the past, too, with our industry, with workers, with carpenters, with it's knowing and understanding and reading instructions to get something right. We don't get to do that in the industry. And unless you work for a company that knows that's a good idea, that has it in their company culture, that plans for it so that you can understand how to do things properly. And so years ago as a carpenter working in the industry, if there was something newer and we were kind of uncertain on it, if I would have sat down and started reading instructions on something as a carpenter, the boss, the person in charge would have probably fired me or would have, in easiest case, yelled at me, told me, get up, get to work, stop doing that. We're on a timeline. We're on a schedule. Everything should only take so long. And that's how you end up with products installed incorrectly with leaks. That is literally why we installed Tyvek house wrap in the early mid 80s, 90s, when Tyvek house wrap was really new. It was installed wrong constantly. And we had an industry that blamed the wrap, that said, this wrap is horrible. This wrap is causing issues. And they stopped using it until they really came up with the science of like, it should be installed like this. It should work and function like this. And if you don't do that, then it can actually get water behind it. And then it speeds up leaks. You see them sooner. So that's what happened to the home building industry, they put house wrap on the wall incorrectly, and they didn't put it on the garage, or they didn't put it on the gable, or they didn't lap it and tape it right, and they didn't pay much attention. They just, it's for blocking air. It's for letting air. It's doing that, and they just slap it on the wall. Well, then they started seeing leaks inside of their one-year workmanship warranty and the one-year home warranty, and they're like, wait a minute. So you didn't see the leak inside of a year prior to that because the leak was soaking into the plywood, to the wood. It was running down the wood, and it would take years to start getting in the wood. Well, if you have a house wrap that comes down the wall and wraps inside of the framing to the top of a window, and water follows that house wrap down between the wood and the house wrap, it just turns into the window and puts that leak right inside, and then you see it right away. You see it way faster. And that's what happened. And we were all just installing it wrong. I did the same thing. The first years that I ever installed house wrap, I wrapped it wrong around the windows. I installed it incorrectly because that's what we did. That's what I was taught. And that's what, if I would have sat down to try and read the instructions and do it different, I probably wouldn't have had a job. So you're just doing what you're taught. It's not really the fault of anybody. It's just how are things passed down and what really comes out of that and how should it be and do we really know? We don't always know, and it takes time to learn that, and that's one of the things I love about where I'm at now. We try to learn that. We do our best. We supply with the time, and that's some of the cost in projects is making sure it's right. It's taking the time to do those things and having the time to do those things and charging for the time to do those things to make sure that it's done to the best of the ability and the best thing for that product. There's a lot of products in our industry that could be installed better, work better if it were just done right, and skipping those steps or not knowing that you're skipping those steps is a huge problem, and it's still a really big problem in our industry. So find somebody that's going to do that research and really make sure they're getting it right for you. So we got one more segment for everybody. If you have anything for me, you got some sort of question, anything coming up, I'm right here, 314-436-7900. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Home Improvement Show, sponsored by Mosby Building Arts. Once again, Rich Orris.
Final moments of the show. If you got something for me, make it quick. 314-436-7900. I do have some text here, so I'm going to go over a couple of these because the good news is we've had so many great calls, questions, comments, conversations. It's been nearly impossible to get to these, but we definitely had one text came in on the toilet cleaning saying that, like, CLR, really, they've tried it. It really doesn't work that well. Another one right after that said that the for that toilet cleaning, which hopefully maybe this is a great replacement for that muriatic acid, is they, so they said they've used a product called RMR tub and tile cleaner, took the stain right out is what they said. So we're good with that. And then we had a question text in about replacing a front door. They have a home. It's all brick. It's 50s to 60s built home, looking to replace the front door, and was asking what's the best door for a front door that faces south that gets a lot of sun. And I'm going to go right into a fiberglass door is going to be the best product for getting a lot of sun. It's going to heat up a little less. It's going to move a little less. and wood can true, real, actual wood can swell and heat and all of that. A steel door. So I have a steel front door, typical built in like 2003 steel front door. And I face west, kind of southwest-ish. And in the winter, the sun is right on that door. It when it's so it's cold all day, come 4 o'clock, 3, 4 o'clock, that sun coming down is just beating on that front door. And that front door is painted black. So think about colors. The darker, the more that sun and the heat's gonna absorb and have issues with that. But in the winter, you can hear that door move. It creaks all by itself. It's expanding and contracting and shrinking and swelling, and more cold air comes in. So I'm constantly fiddling with the weather stripping and trying to keep that kind of sealed as much as possible. That door's pretty leaky. It's definitely next on my list from all the doors being replaced, but just like most homeowners, that could be 2 years away for me. I'm still trying to wrap up and do some interior painting and stuff around all the other new doors and changing locks and doing all that. So even for the shoemaker and the kids running around without shoes, that's kind of how I am. I may not do that door for a year or two, just depending on life circumstances and what comes about and other projects that may come up. You always got to be on the lookout for that. I would recommend fiberglass for that door. Hey, we got John on the line. John, we got 1 minute. If you could real quick get something out, and I'll see if I can answer it.
Okay, I was wondering about, I went out in the garage the other day, and I pulled on the chain. There's a light, you know, it's in like a ceramic fixture, and, uh-huh. you know, just, and I pulled the chain pulled to turn the light on, and I can't remember if I was turning it on or turning it off, but anyway, I pulled the damn chain out of there. What did you just shut the electric off and then just get on a ladder up there and then put another chain in there?
Well, I mean, you're better off just getting a whole new key light pull chain fixture, they call it. That entire fixture is going to replace really quickly and easily. So, yeah, cut the power off. Get a new fixture. They make them now, too, where they're plastic, so you don't have to worry about the porcelain breaking, cutting you, or anything like that. And they're super inexpensive. So you can buy the chain replacement and try and do all this stuff, but you have to take the fixture down to change that chain out in that whole kind of pull chain fixture. So it's just as cost-effective, quicker, and easier to cut the power off, replace the whole fixture, turn it back on, and you're new and you're good and refreshed. So appreciate the call and the question, John. I'm glad that was a simple one we could get in. And for everybody out there, hey, have a good one. Be good. Be good to each other. Be good to your homes. I will look forward to talking to everybody and having some great conversations again next week.